What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology, now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with a city on edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorindi returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the South Side Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare, on Prime Video, now streaming.
Welcome, 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 my friends. Today, we jump into the heart of Virginia lore, uncovering a couple of stories that make their history rich, mysterious, and sometimes downright eerie. On this episode, we venture into Old Dominion, Virginia, to explore two of its most interesting tales. First, we'll step inside the historic walls of the Peyton Randolph House in Colonial Williamsburg, a site known for its beauty and its hauntings. Place where past residents seem very reluctant to leave. Sort of like how I was in my parents' house. Then we'll venture into the darker corners of Virginia folklore, where the Bunny Man has become a legend that transcends time. A tale that blends horror with mystery, leaving those who hear it to wonder where the line between myth and reality lies. So join me as I unravel Virginia's histories, hauntings, and horror stories, illuminating the enduring presence of these tales in American folklore. Do you believe in ghosts? Join me on a journey through America's dark and haunted past as we explore the ghost stories and folklore that have been passed down for generations. What scares you? Let's find out. I'm Christopher Feinstein, and this is Haunted American History. With a history dating back to 1715, the Peyton Randolph House stands as one of the oldest and most distinctive homes in Colonial Williamsburg. Originally constructed by William Robertson, it was later acquired by Sir John Randolph in 1721, a man of great wealth and prestige who expanded the property by purchasing the adjacent land and building a second home in 1724. Sir John Randolph, the sole Virginian to be knighted by the English crown, commanded immense respect within the community, as you could imagine. Following Sir Randolph's passing in 1737, his wife Susanna took charge of the house until their son Peyton reached the age of 24. But they took care of all their kids. Their eldest son inherited property in Gloucester County, while their third son received land in the southern part of the city. They were good parents. Susanna continued to reside in her house until her own death in 1754. It was Peyton Randolph who embarked on expanding the home, constructing an elaborate central section that linked all the rooms to create an L-shaped structure. The east wing of the house, however, remained separate from the rest, serving as a modern-day mother-in-law suite. Remarkably, the center section still retains some of its original and finest surviving paneling in the entire historic district. That said paneling is made of exquisite walnut. The house is full of fine brass hinges and locks, and a floor that is predominantly made of edge-cut pine. A tour through Colonial Williamsburg offers a glimpse into the meticulous attention to detail that defines the interior of this remarkable home. On the second floor, one can still find remnants of the Randolph family's quarters, preserving a tangible connection to their past. The Peyton Randolph House has earned numerous accolades over the years, cementing its reputation as one of the most haunted properties in America. it holds the distinction of being both the most original house in Colonial Williamsburg and the most haunted. Visitors on ghost tours have been known to faint or experience medical issues in front of the house, with instances occurring several times within a single month. Now, I know what you're saying. We've said this before. This is the most haunted house in all of America. And a lot of the times, these are stories perpetrated by tour groups to kind of boost their sales. But these encounters are not limited to just one tour guide or group, but rather they seem to transcend all boundaries. This is no mere superstition. The Peyton Randolph House demands attention. The haunted reputation has made the Randolph House a prominent fixture on pretty much every ghost tour in Williamsburg, and it's firmly established as a status as the most infamous structure in the area. Throughout its existence since 1715, approximately 30 individuals have met their end within its walls. Victims of accidents, murders, wars, and strange illnesses. The final form of the Randolph House comprises three interconnected structures, joined by connecting walls and hallways accompanied by several outbuildings. Its exterior is adorned with red panel siding, harkening back to its original appearance. Sir Randolph wasted no time in expanding the home after acquiring it, resulting in the grand scale that we witness today. Peyton Randolph himself holds a significant place in American history, as some consider him the first president of the United States. He presided over both the First and Second Continental Congresses and played an instrumental role in leading up to the American Revolution. During his tenure, Peyton Randolph chaired a meeting with Patrick Henry, and he delivered his fiery "Give me liberty or give me death" speech, which is fantastic. He also successfully negotiated the return of gunpowder to the Colonial Magazine from Governor Dunmore. Moreover, his residence served as a gathering place for other revolutionaries, including George Wythe and Thomas Jefferson, who was also his cousin. Following Peyton's death in Philadelphia in 1775, his body was preserved in a barrel and sent back to Williamsburg for burial. Today, he rests alongside his father, Sir Randolph, and brother, John Randolph, who was a Tory, which is kind of slang for an American colonist who supported the British. They lie in William and Mary's Wren Chapel, specifically the Wren Crypt. The books bequeathed to Peyton by his father were passed on to his cousin, Thomas Jefferson, who incorporated the extensive collection into his own library. These very books would go on to form the foundation of the Library of Congress. After Peyton's demise, his wife, Elizabeth Betty Harrison, continued to reside in the house until her passing in 1782. In 1781, the house served as headquarters for French forces under the command of General Jean-Baptiste d'Ontien. It's a name that I will never, ever, ever, ever in my entire life be able to pronounce. I'm going to try, though. General Jean-Baptiste d'Ontien de Villemur, Comte de... Why do you have so many last names, sir? Well, anyway, he was the general during the Siege of Yorktown. Jesus, that is insane. You think, like, I'm talking about Williamsburg, Virginia. There's not going to be any complicated names to recite during that. Ugh. Following Betty Randolph's death in 1782, I'm still at a loss for words. The house was put up for auction and awarded to the highest bidder, Joseph Hornsby. See, there's a nice easy name, Joseph Hornsby, come on. And that took place in 1783. In the early 19th century, the Peachy family became the subsequent owners of the house. See, Peachy. This woman's name was Mary Monroe Peachy, and she was a notable resident of the home. She hosted a visit from French General... French General Lafayette during his tour of the United States, with Lafayette spending two nights in the house in October of 1824. An intriguing piece of history is often overlooked that during the aftermath of the Battle of Williamsburg, the Peyton Randolph House, occupied by the Peachy family at the time, served as a hospital for treating wounded soldiers. The Peyton Randolph House and nearly 30 other buildings in the area were pressed into service as hospitals. In the early 1920s, the Wilson Ball family purchased the property and divided it into smaller lots with two separate buildings. Both of these buildings had basements, and unfortunately, any archaeological evidence of previous structures or features was destroyed during their construction work. Colonial Williamsburg acquired one of the main structures from Miss Ball in 1938 and eventually purchased the rest of the original property in the 1960s. The two 1920s-era homes were subsequently removed in the early 1970s. The first restoration of the house commenced on October of 1939 and was completed by April of 1940. A second restoration project took place in June of 1967 and it lasted for about a year. On July 1, 1968, the center and west sections of the house were open to visitors while the east wing remained occupied. Of course, no history of a home like this would be complete without the haunting tales associated with it. Eerie voices echo from within, objects mysteriously move around, and visitors, including the renowned French general Lafayette, have reported feeling hands touching and pushing them, sometimes resulting in falls down staircases. In 1924, during his return visit to Williamsburg, Lafayette stayed in the Peyton Randolph house and recorded his experience. This is what he said. "I consider myself fortunate to lodge in the home of a great man, Peyton Randolph. Upon my arrival, as I entered through the foyer, I felt a hand on my shoulder. It nudged me as if it intended to keep me from entering. I turned quickly, but found no one there. And the nights were not restful, as the sounds of voices kept me awake for most of my stay." When the house served as a lodging establishment in the late 1960s, guests would often flee in the middle of the night after experiencing physical or violent shaking, their limbs being tugged on, and witnessing apparitions hovering above their beds. One guest recounted their harrowing encounter in an interview for Jackie Bernard's book, The Hauntings of Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. "I was resting comfortably when I was awakened by a peculiar feeling of someone tugging on my arm. Naturally, I assumed I was dreaming, so I rolled over and went back to sleep. A short while later, I was being shaken violently. As my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I could see that I was completely alone. I darted out of the bed and ran as fast as I could. I didn't even go back to collect the things I'd left behind." Tragic events have unfolded within the walls of the Peyton Randolph house over the years, further fueling its haunted reputation. One such incident involved a young boy from the Peachy family who tragically fell to his death while climbing a tree in the 19th century. Another heart-wrenching tale tells of a young girl residing on the second floor who fell out of her window, resulting in her untimely demise. Additionally, a Confederate veteran attending the College of William and Mary suddenly fell ill and died under mysterious circumstances while staying in the house. In a later incident, two men engaged in a heated argument, ultimately resorting to gunfire and killing each other. Perhaps one of the most frightening accounts is that of a security guard from Colonial Williamsburg who became trapped in the basement of the house. As he attempted to exit through the shutter doors in the rear, he heard an ominous growl and felt an unseen force firmly grab his legs, preventing him from moving forward. Paralyzed by fear, he found himself unable to escape as the shutter doors slammed shut in front of him and his flashlight inexplicably turned off. Summoning up all of his courage, he radioed for help, and when his lieutenant finally arrived and forced open the cellar doors, he was released from the clutches of whatever presence had ensnared him. Some claim that he quit his job the next day, but in reality he remained for 3 more months before pursuing a higher paying position somewhere else. Me, I would have quit the moment before the doors closed. As soon as my feet got grabbed, I quit. I don't know who I'd be telling. I'd be telling the ghost. I'm not telling my boss, obviously, because I'm alone down there, but he would know. Oh, he would know. Numerous other paranormal encounters have been reported in the Peyton Randolph house throughout the years. Visitors have heard unexplained knocking sounds emanating from within. Some have witnessed furniture moving on its own and even heard the laughter of a phantom child echoing through its halls. The second floor is widely regarded as the most haunted, with many recounting experiences of feeling an ominous presence pushing them, often leading them down the stairs. Security guards have also reported hearing a woman singing in the backyard, only to find no one present. Another strange incident involved an alarm going off in the east wing of the house, which was previously occupied by two women who had since passed away. Security personnel unable to access the property due to the lack of keys had to enter through a window. To their astonishment, they discovered a peculiar sight. A fire extinguisher positioned in the center of the room. Its contents emptied in a controlled circular pattern around it. Now, obviously, they suspected that there was an intrusion, and they radioed in for additional support to thoroughly search the house. What was strange, though, is that the fire-retardant material didn't seep under the door or extend into other sections of the main house. It's almost as if an invisible boundary had halted it. What's even more strange was the discovery that the fire extinguisher was completely empty, with the pin removed, but the pin was never found. Yet when it was lifted, there was no trace of any discharge beneath it. It appeared as though the fire extinguisher had been placed in the middle of the room from the wall, with its nozzle pointed downward, and had sprayed its contents in this peculiar pattern while remaining perfectly stationary. Now, no residue anywhere or evidence of intrusion could be found, which left security personnel baffled by this occurrence. Now, when you think of a haunted house, usually the question pops into your head is, why is it haunted? And normally the answers are, well, someone died inside of it. But sometimes there's other answers. There's one popular theory that attributes the haunting to a curse placed on the house by Betty Randolph's slave, Eve. According to this account, Eve cursed the property in 1782 after being forcibly separated from her son when they were sold to different owners as punishment for running away from the British the previous year. Another theory suggests that the house's paranormal activity stems from Betty Randolph's alleged mistreatment of her slaves, an aspect of her character shrouded in mystery. That tends to happen a lot. Some of these respected, notable figures in the community often hide a dark secret behind closed doors. It's not unlike the infamous La Lurie Mansion in New Orleans. Now, I know we're talking about Virginia, and I've done New Orleans already. But like I said, I'm going to revisit states, but I can't bring up something and not talk about it just a little bit. So, Mary Daphne McCarty La Lurie and her husband, Dr. Louis La Lurie, were esteemed members of the New Orleans Society, much like the Randolphs. But they were hiding a dark secret behind the facade of wealth and prestige. Their slaves were subjected to horrific medical experiments, including torture, forced sex changes, and limbs being stretched and rearranged to resemble a crab-like form. They removed some people's faces to create grotesque human gargoyles, and other unspeakable acts of cruelty were inflicted upon these unfortunate souls. Once their crimes were exposed, the La Lauries fled to France to escape the public's wrath. Now, while you can't completely rule out that similar atrocities occurred at the Randolph House, there's very limited evidence to support the claims of slave mistreatment on such a scale. A more plausible explanation lies in the disturbance of Native American burial sites on or near the property. Now, this theory is one that I think has the most base to it, but it's also surprisingly the theory that is overlooked most. During my research, it just didn't come up that much. But the theory suggests that the primary source of the haunting activity predates Betty Randolph and Eve, pointing instead to disturbed resting places of Native Americans who inhabited the area long before colonization. Although evidence of pre-colonial activity on the Randolph property is sparse, a 1998 report acknowledges that no indigenous artifacts or features were discovered during archaeological excavations conducted in the 30s, 50s, or 80s. This finding contradicts a 1952 archaeological report that mentioned Indian burials on the east side of the yard, as relayed by Mrs. Ball, the previous owner. However, the 1998 report highlights inconsistencies in the discovery of Native American remains specific to the Peyton Randolph backlot. It is worth noting that the graves discovered in 1938 were disturbed in 1940 and then referenced again in 1952 were unfortunately destroyed during the construction of the National Parkway Tunnel in 1940. The tunnel passes beneath the grounds near the Peyton Randolph house, and it disturbed and erased any trace of nearby Indian burial sites from historical records. This overlooked aspect of history offers a more plausible explanation for the haunting phenomena experienced at the Peyton Randolph house, predating the accounts attributed to Betty Randolph and Eve. The numerous tragic deaths and unexplained occurrences over the past three centuries only serve to reinforce the notion that disturbed Native American burial sites on the Randolph House grounds are likely responsible for the paranormal activity witnessed within its walls. The deep well of pre-colonial history in this area may have been overshadowed or downplayed, especially considering that many of these buildings were constructed in the early 18th century and do not accurately represent the colonial period emulated by colonial Williamsburg. Native Americans inhabited this land for thousands of years. They lived, died, and were laid to rest here. It is only reasonable to assume that their spirits, possibly disturbed by the disturbance of their final resting places, continue to inhabit the area, alongside the ghosts of our colonial ancestors. Hey friends, real quick, I just wanted to stop and thank everybody for the reviews. Last week, I said, hey, you Apple folks have been slacking. And you guys came out and kept it running. But listen, Spotify still's got you beat. Sorry. Spotify, as of right now, this recording, I'm at 999 ratings on Spotify. So close to that. I can taste that 1,000. So if you haven't rated, please shoot me a rating on Spotify. It just helps more people find the show. And same thing on Apple. I think I had like 9 or 10 reviews come in over the week, which is great. It's fantastic. But if you haven't done it yet, please help me out. We're just shy of, I think, a little over a week. I think 10 days now left in the Zachary Bain Kickstarter. I'm about 20% of my goal, which, guys, thank you so much. Just really for, just taking the time and reaching out and just supporting the story. Even if it doesn't reach the goal, you guys have already come to bat for me so much. So thank you all so much. And we still got 10 days, so a lot can happen. Anywho, let's just keep this story rolling. Real quick, thanks also for the support for Folklore Fireside with me and my wife. Those the live show that we do on YouTube. We have so much fun with it. We enjoy just bantering back and forth. The last episode we did was on the Hodag, something that we really didn't know anything about. And turns out there isn't really much to know. So that was kind of flub on us, I guess, but we still had fun with it and people seem to have enjoyed it. So thank you so much. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. We do it Friday nights. We're live. Come and hang out and subscribe to the YouTube. And I'm going to be putting up more videos of just like, besides the Folklore Fireside, just me out, visiting strange places and probably theme parks too. Because I really do enjoy theme parks. I talk about it so much on this show how much I love, well, I used to a lot. Talk about how much I love theme parks. And I'm going to start, now that the weather's starting to get nice, well, this little spring is in the air, I'm going to start heading out and doing, I know it has nothing to do with Haunted American History, and people are going to be like, what are you doing? But it's my channel, you know what I mean? I will put on it what I want, even if no one wants to watch it. That's just, But I'm going to do like haunted locations too. I'm going to bring up my courage and visit some of these haunted spots, which I might have a little news on soon. I'm waiting to hear back, but you might have an opportunity to come to a live Haunted American History in a haunted location, perhaps? Details on that are going to come soon. But so please subscribe, comment, share, or just say hi. All right, folks, let's keep this train a-rolling. Virginia Bunny Man, here we come.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology, now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with a city on edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorindi returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the South Side Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, the Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, the Scare, on Prime Video, now streaming.
The Bunny Man urban legend has long fascinated residents of Fairfax County. It captivates their imagination with its eerie and downright creepy nature. The tale has taken on various forms over the years, spreading through the farthest reaches of the internet. But the true story behind the Bunny Man may be even stranger than the fiction. Fairfax County historian Brian Connolly, who is well-versed in the legend's origins, acknowledges the bizarre nature of a creepy figure dressed oddly on Halloween who throws hatchets at unsuspecting victims. Yet against all odds, this bizarre story is indeed rooted in truth. For over four decades, the Bunny Man legend has held Northern Virginia in its grip, weaving its way into the fabric of local folklore. Connolly first encountered this chilling tale during his own youth in the 1970s. It surfaced in a 1973 research paper by a University of Maryland undergraduate and has since been passed down from generation to generation of local teenagers. Now, although the legend has evolved and transformed over time, as legends like this often do, its core narrative remains consistent. In the early 20th century, nestled within the woods that separated Clifton from Fairfax Station, an asylum for the criminally insane stood. Eventually, this asylum closed its doors and its residents were transported by bus to Lorton Prison. Tragically, during the journey, the bus careened off course and crashed, and many of the convicts managed to escape but were subsequently recaptured. Except for one elusive individual named Douglas Griffin. Now, as authorities searched tirelessly for Griffin, they stumbled upon a disturbing trail of half-eaten bunnies strewn along what was known as the Fairfax Station Bridge. Months went by as the police scoured the area for any sign of Griffin, but their efforts proved fruitless. Then came along Halloween night, when a group of teenagers gathered under the bridge. At the stroke of midnight, they fell victim to a vicious attack. The following morning, their lifeless bodies were discovered hanging from the bridge, their remains gruesomely mutilated. To this day, the legend persists that anyone present at Bunny Man Bridge on Halloween night will meet the same gruesome fate as those ill-fated teens. And rabbits, too. Let's not forget the rabbits. Connolly acknowledges that the most widely known version of the story possesses a certain quality akin to creative writing. However, he points out that several historical inaccuracies that render this account false. Lorton Prison did not open until 1916, and there is no record of a Douglas Griffin in the Fairfax Court archives. And the supposed old Clifton Library cited by the article's author as evidence never actually existed. A constant stream of questions about the Bunny Man legend rekindled Connolly's interest in the subject. He was determined to uncover the truth, so he embarked on nearly a decade of research, which culminated in the publication of an authoritative paper on the topic in 2002. Diving deep into historical records, Connolly unraveled a story that is even more bizarre than the legend itself. On October 18, 1970, the Washington Post reported an incident involving Air Force Academy cadet Robert Bennett and his fiancée. The couple sat parked in their car on the 5400 block of Guinea Road in Fairfax, near Bennett's uncle's house, around midnight when an unsuspecting figure emerged before them. A man dressed in a white suit with long bunny ears. He angrily shouted at them, claiming that they were trespassing on private property and threatening to report their license plate number. Without warning, he hurled a wood-handled hatchet at their car through the front window. Fortunately, neither Bennett nor his fiancée sustained any injuries. 2 weeks later, according to an October 31st Washington Post article, the bunny man resurfaced just a block away from his initial sighting. Private security guard Paul Phillips spotted the man standing on the front porch of a newly constructed but unoccupied house, and he was brandishing an axe. In an interview, Phillips recounted the encounter. "I started talking to him, and that's when he started chopping. With several swings of his weapon, the bunny man threatened Phillips, exclaiming, 'All you people trespass around here, and if you don't get out, I'm going to bust your head open.'" Conley's relentless pursuit of the truth led him to police and investigative reports that confirmed the Fairfax County Police actively searched for a young man in his late teens or early 20s dressed as a bunny. However, despite their efforts, they were unable to substantiate the existence of this figure. Their final report stated, "After a very extensive investigation into this and all other cases of the same nature, it is still unsubstantiated as to whether or not there really is a white rabbit." Consequently, the police ultimately classified the case as inactive. Connolly's tenacity also led him to locate the couple who had experienced the harrowing incident with the hatchet. Although they preferred not to delve into the details of the incident that had occurred 45 years earlier, they confirmed its veracity. Additionally, they provided vivid recollections of the events, as did the aunt who had assisted them in the aftermath. Connolly recounts how she vividly remembered painstakingly removing shards of shattered glass from the girl's hair. To this day, the identity and the motivations of the bunny man remain shrouded in mystery. Connolly admits that any theories regarding the bunny man's true identities are purely speculative. However, he proposes one possibility. Perhaps an elderly man, described by Connolly as a curmudgeon, owned the property where the couple were purposely trespassing. Although the man had passed away a year or two prior to an incident, it is plausible that a younger family member took up his cause. Alternatively, it could have been simply been an individual who harbored resentment toward the region's ongoing development at the time. Furthermore, considering that the bunny man would have been in his early 20s in the 1970s, it is conceivable that he still may be alive today. Unless, as Connolly suggests, he carelessly mishandled that hatchet. As of now, no one has come forward to confess their role as the notorious bunny man. In the present day, the legend of the bunny man has eclipsed the actual truth. There was no murder, there was no asylum for the insane, and there was no bridge associated with these events. Connolly posits that the Fairfax Station Bridge, which is now even labeled the Bunny Man Bridge on Google Maps, was merely a nearby local hangout spot for teenagers, and that's where the story was concocted. Even the town of Clifton fully embraces this legend, capitalizing on its allure with Bunny Man-themed t-shirts and the haunted Halloween attraction. While the legend may continue to evoke horror, fear, and spine-chilling terror, the truth behind it is equally strange. If there was ever a story that was really ripe to grow and get a little bit out of hand, it has to be the Bunny Man. It's Virginia's own homegrown urban legend. I'm Christopher Feinstein, and this is Haunted American History. I'd like to take a minute and welcome the newest member of the Patreon, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining. Your support means everything. The support of all my patrons, you guys are the best. If you'd like to join the Patreon, patreon.com/hauntedamericanhistory. Ad-free episodes, early releases, and it's just my eternal, eternal gratitude. Thank you all so much, and I'll see you guys soon. Later.